the one place where news, opinions, and entertainment are the way you like it. This is Rant EM Radio.
We can do so much more. We can save this world. With the right leadership.
I'll make a recording of my formulae for the Senator, in case I don't return this time. If only I won't be too late.
Go take a run and jump.
I understand.
I'm here to meet your fate.
He's right.
Then one iron club blow sends the first guard to
try my new electro sun ray.
Welcome to the What Are You Reading comic book show.
Uh-oh. Had to play it again. You know why? We're still in that weekend. Got some box office news for you. This is the beginning of the end for the What Are You Reading comic book show. We are at the last show for 2015. We have finally made a journey to the end, but all journeys must come to an end because Krampus is waiting for us to bring this show to his knees. But before we go out, we're going to reminisce over the year that was 2015. And of course, we're going to get in that one last little hooray. This movie of movies. Star Wars, The Force Awakens. I'm your host, Surfer. I'm screaming loud because the music is loud. So I'm about to stop it now and start the show. Thank you for listening, people. In 2015, we really appreciate all the fans and all the support and all the people listening live on the download. And we hope that we're here for you for this last show. We hope we hear from you every week. But, you know, we're doing a little end of the year show where we talk about comic books of the year and some movies. And we'll take calls. Don't worry. On the line, of course, is a Worthless Cobb, Jordan. How are you, Jordan?
I'm so glad that you finally revealed your thought of me, you jackass.
Well, I'm not. It's your name, you know. It's there to make fun of. So I mean, if you change your middle name, then I couldn't make that joke. So.
But. Oh, sorry, Stanley. No hissy fit for you today. Sorry. Every time I hear him say that, I kind of want to respond to that in that annoying hissy fit like voice so he can get some pleasure out of it.
He
said
he's going to call in, so.
Well, sorry to disappoint. No hissy fit or whatever for you, Stanley. Sorry.
We got to get this out of the way. The box office number for Star Wars, The Force Awakens. It smashed the opening weekend box office numbers, brought in $238 million on its opening weekend, beating the hell out of Jurassic World.
Good. Well, that makes me happy because a good movie got a record.
And it also smashed the single day record of $120 million on Friday. With some of those numbers, I guess, Thursday night, but they still count it as one day. Worldwide, it's already up to $517 million. It brought in another $279 million overseas. And the movie basically opened at the same time everywhere, because they only opened it like a day or so earlier than we got it. So it wasn't like it was open a week or so or a month like some movies are. So basically, everybody ran out. Now,
it's Star Wars, man.
Yeah. Now, I don't know how to take the initial day numbers, because we had that big total on Friday. Saturday, Sunday, quite a drop. Sunday only brought in 68 million, and I mean Saturday brought in 68 million. Sunday is 48 million. Now, do you think that's a bad thing, or just, you know?
It's Star Wars. It's not going to be really a bad thing. It's going to make its money.
Okay. Well, we won't be on the air next week, but we'll keep an eye on it and see how much the box office drops next weekend. You know, if a movie brings in 230 million.
Yes, because Will Smith's concussion is totally gonna overthrow Star Wars.
If it comes in at under 100 million next week, then maybe the people have turned on the movie.
But it's gonna make like still.
Well, it's making the money.
It's gonna be number
one. Make a lot of money.
I'm gonna say it's also gonna be the number one movie at the opening weekend of 2016.
And then the question is, can it reach Avatar numbers?
I think it'll be Avatar.
Because it's easy to get a bunch of money up front, but to catch Avatar, you gotta have a lot of money week after week after week. And
that's I think it will. I know. I honestly think it'll really just beat the shit out of Avatar in terms of box office.
That's why both Avatar and before that, when Titanic went on to be the number one at the box office, because it wasn't just everybody ran out for the first couple of weeks, but it was 8-9 weeks down the road, people were still going to see the movie, and it was still bringing in like big money. So, yeah, you know, it's rare that a movie will do that. So we'll see if that happens too. It'll probably surpass the Jurassic World as far as how much money it makes this year. I believe that it'll do that, because it's already halfway there. So it'll probably be the number one movie. Definitely be the number one movie of 2015. But
Again, it's gonna. It's gonna just I you know what, in all honesty, with you know really how overrated I find Avatar, I kind of do. It's a way to want it to be that way.
Let's not turn on Avatar. Avatar, when it came out, it was a breathtakingly stunning movie to watch. I enjoyed it. You could maybe argue that the story wasn't original, fine, but it still was a fine movie to see, especially if you saw it in IMAX. It was fantastic.
Stanley, that was Surfer that talked about microwaved corn on the cob. Don't put that on me just because my last name's Cobb, you sick pervert.
So Jordan.
What?
Please tell these people how they can call in and.
Yes, if you want to join us for the last time of the year, numerous ways in which you can join us. You can call us on the phone, 215-253-4516. Skype us by contacting and or just calling the contact Silver Surfer _ forever, all lowercase to help your search, or join us in the Listen Live chat room with me. Surfer Odinson and Stanley Kubrick. At www.rantneum.com/chatlistenslive. We're also at www.rantneumradio.com/chatlistenslive. You can listen to us live, or if you can't listen to us with the rest of the programming on a loop all week, but if you can't do it that way, listen at your own convenience with Stitcher Internet Radio, Podbean, Geek Life Radio, Blog Talk Radio, and of course the almighty iTunes. Open up iTunes today and search for Rant Entertainment Media Radio in the podcasting section. And while you're subscribing, review us and rate us 5 stars. It would be great.
Okay. So today's agenda. First, Jordan's going to go over his top books of 2015. He'll bore you a bit with that because he hasn't learned.
Wait, really? No. Oh, and yours is going to be so much better.
It's going to thrill the audience.
Well, I'm sorry, what?
You know, if you need some Z's during the show, do what you got to do, man. It's been long. It's you know.
Maybe your resolution should be that you need to be a lot better to your co-host next year.
No, okay. I'm not going to waste my one resolution on that when I could be making a resolution to become rich. So, but how have you been since I talked to you last?
I've been busy. So goddamn busy.
Busy for doing what?
Writing, editing. I turned in a short piece. I'm waiting to hear if I'm going to be published by Mark Millar on Wednesday. Because that's, you know, when all the winners of that are getting announced.
Oh, you entered his writing contest.
Yeah, of course I did.
Oh, so what happens if you win?
I'll be published by Millar World and possibly given a job over there. Who knows?
Shit, do you believe in me?
No, don't worry. You got Stanley lurking over your shoulder and in your basement. Is he not going to be enough for you?
No, first of all, he doesn't. He's not serious. He's not a co-host. He doesn't want to do the show. He just wants to make jokes and stuff. And
what's wrong with that?
I'm trying to put on serious entertainment.
Be a professional, huh?
Yes.
Hmm.
But, you know.
I've just been busy. All that, Star Wars, Christmas, hey, presents, cooking, everything's happening at once.
So what did you write Millar for? What kind of story?
5-page Kingsman short story.
It was to write a story of a known property?
Of one of his known properties. You had to choose between either, like, a Hit Girl, Kick-Ass, Chrononauts, or, hold on. Yeah, I can bring up the list right in front of me. Because, again, he's choosing 6 random writers and 6 random artists to win. And he'll even pay them the standard rate of what DC and Marvel do. Remember we talked about this, like, when we first broke the story in, I think it was about October or so.
Oh, that was a long time ago.
Okay, well, the submissions are a Kick-Ass story, a 5-page Kick-Ass story set between books 1 and 3, a 5-page Kingsman story starring Eggsy, a Hit Girl solo adventure that's 4 pages, a 5-page Starlight story starring young Duke McQueen on Tana Tillis, American Jesus, set during the first book, 5 pages, and a 4-page Chrononauts book set in the past during the first book.
Okay.
Same with the artists.
Well, good for you. All right, so yeah, nothing exciting for me. I don't get to write books anymore, you know.
Why don't you just write? Just write.
Well, I can't type, so trying to write something long takes me forever to do. If I could learn how to type, I could write more. But and then because I can't type,
paper?
Because I can't type, I do a lot of typos, and then what? I have to go a lot of word correcting, and it gets frustrating.
What about notebooks?
What do you mean notebooks?
Can't you write in a notebook?
Come on now, this is the 21st century.
I know plenty of people who still write notebooks. I actually still do that from time to time.
Yeah, okay, that's slow and tedious.
Now it can be a real helpful tip when you're drafting ideas and such.
Anyway, enough about my problems. Let's hear your top 5 books of 2015, Jordan.
Top 5. All right, let me bring up my list.
I will play this video game while you go through that.
I'm so glad you care.
I'm just You know, I gotta keep the world safe from evil.
Number 5 has mostly been my main Marvel book for a while, but that's not the case this year. Daredevil by Mark Waid and Chris Samnee.
Okay.
Which officially ended its run, and on such a great high note. Mark, again, ever since Mark Waid took over Punisher, it's been the most consistent, most entertaining.
Punisher?
No, Daredevil.
I thought you just said Punisher.
No, I said Daredevil.
I know you mentioned Daredevil was the book, but it just...
Okay, well, if I did, then that's a fuck-up. My bad. Okay. But Daredevil. Daredevil has been the most consistent superhero book out on the market ever since Waid took over. And with Samnee, he found an amazing partner that just makes the book look so good, so vibrant and interesting, that the action sequence, that the... You know, dramatic sequences with conversations are just as dynamic and interesting as all the action sequences. It's fantastic. And the relocation to San Francisco didn't hurt it at all. The conclusions to how this book ended, as to how Waid completed his overarching story, was absolutely fantastic and true to pretty much all the characters involved, especially Daredevil. That was fantastic. Now, number 4 is Surfer's favorite genre, horror. Ain't that right, Surfer?
Yeah, I love me to get this shit scared out of me.
Yeah, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Harrow County is a creator-owned Dark Horse book from writer Cullen Bunn and artist Tyler Crook.
Your boy, Cullen Bunn.
Yes, who we've interviewed on the show before.
Mm-hmm.
Hope he actually still listens. Doubt he does, but whatever. Anyway, this book actually started off as a prose story that was being slowly published through Bun's site. It tells the story of a young girl who at about her 18th birthday. And Emmy, who about her 18th birthday discovers she might be the reincarnation of a witch that was hung by the town very long ago and vowed, I'm pretty much going to come back and fuck your shit up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty much going to do that. And it seems that's become, and it seems that's come that way. It's a weird bit of a coming of age story of discovering who you are, you know, while being a witch and while being actually a very captivatingly enough story of a family story about, you know, her and her father.
Mm-hmm.
And the process and the characterization and progression of Emmy is wonderfully fascinating. This book is also scary as hell. The art by Tyler Crook is lovingly done with this sort of simplistic, joyful watercolor style look done to it. But when it gets scary and dark, it gets dark, and it's fascinating that way. Like, there's one of the characters in the book is a flap of skin, like the entire skin of a young boy that is drawn to Emmy. It's fascinating, just absolutely fascinating. And again, the way this book is narrated and how it's set up actually does feel like this would be a prose novel. And honestly, were it to be released like this, I would find it just as captivating like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely fantastic. And the first trade actually came out just earlier this month, which collects issues 1 through 4. So I'm very much going to recommend that you go pick it up, because it's very well worth your time, especially if you're a horror movie.
A horror movie, huh?
A horror comic. Although I wouldn't mind it being a horror movie, but we already know it's being optioned for a show by Sci-Fi, as we discussed last week. All right, number 3. I hate this iPod. Number 3 is my pick for the best superhero book of all year, Miss Marvel. Kamala Khan. Kamala Khan. The journey of Kamala Khan is absolutely amazing. Kamala Khan. G. Willow Wilson has created one of the most interesting, one of the most endearing, one of the most beloved characters to set foot in the Marvel Universe. And it happens to be a Muslim American teenage and human with shape-shifting abilities.
Yeah, so Donald Trump, I loved it when she punched Donald Trump in the face.
That was amazing.
Yeah.
If only that could happen for reals, with the giant fist just knocking that son of a bitch in the face. All right, I'm getting off track. The journey of Kamala Khan in balancing her life, even possibly finding love, as it seemed, and, you know, being a hero, and then, you know, the world ending around the time of her breakup, which was actually very nicely done. It's like, you know how often it can feel like after a breakup the world is ending? Well, it's literally happening for Kamala.
Okay.
Her, again, this is a purely done character booking. And again, G. Willow Wilson does a fascinating examination of her. And also life for Muslims living in America in a post 9/11 sort of world, and how it affected Kamala Khan's viewpoint in growing up.
Yeah, so she has to deal with her family and their thoughts on things, and peers, and of course, you know. Now, in the beginning, she was transforming into Carol Danvers. Can she still do that, or?
No, she can't. Although, one of the highlights towards the end of the first run, before the all-new, all-different Marvel relaunch, she got to team up with Carol Danvers.
Right. So why was she transforming into Carol Danvers at first?
Because Carol Danvers is her idol. Did you not read that?
No, I understand that. I'm saying why, like, what was happening? Was she...
Kamala Khan's idol is very much...
Yeah, I understand her idol's Ms. Marvel. I get that. Well, the old
that Marvel. That's why she did it. Like, when she stepped out of the Terrigen Mist, that's the reason she had that costume on. That's why she was looking like that. It was like her subconscious telling her, oh, hey, you're Ms. Marvel now.
Okay, what I'm asking, okay, is that she was consciously turning into Ms. Marvel, or was her powers just making her turn that way, and then she got control of him, over him, and now she doesn't turn into her no more?
She was gaining control of her powers, and so right. I feel like I just answered this question.
So, okay, could she transform into anybody else?
Okay, no, she can't transform into anybody else. That's not her. That's not the abilities of her shapeshifting.
Right. So she can't shapeshift to another form.
Well, she can shift and shape almost any part of her body to be
enlarged. Yeah, I understand. She can make.
She can grow. She can shrink.
Okay, but change.
That's the ability of her shapeshifting. She cannot change her appearance. She cannot change her identity. If that's what you're asking.
She only did that in the beginning.
Yes.
Am I frustrating you, Jordan? I mean, I'm asking.
I feel like I already answered this.
I mean, if you're not too happy with me, you can...
Don't even try the guilt tripping right now, please. Just, I know your game. I already answered like a couple sentences ago. No, she can't fully do that. And again, the reason she did it at first, because it's like subconsciously she thought, oh, shit, I'm turning into... Hey, am I turning into Carol Danvers? Because, you know, I'm wearing the old Miss Marvel costume.
All right, continue.
I mean, and again, it's a great examination of what it means for her to grow up like that,
mm-hmm.
and how it affects her, and also her personal relationships with her family, with her friends, and even with fellow superheroes. Like, her team ups with Wolverine was wonderful, and Captain Marvel,
which
Spider-Man.
Wolverine, the new Wolverine or the old one?
It was Logan before he died. Old Wolverine.
Okay.
Logan. No, that's what made that absolutely amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And also the book's funny as hell. It's just, it's what. It's just the most goddamn enjoyable superhero book you could imagine. And something I'd feel comfortable being like, hey, if I had a little niece, would be like, hey, I want you to read this. I want you to read this. This is going to be a greatly positive, influencing book on you. And I would love for you to see her as a hero. Because Kamala Khan is a true, pure and bred hero. She cares about people. She is honestly a damn good person.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so that's what makes Ms. Marvel the best superhero book of this entire year. And I don't understand why you aren't. Why no one? And if you're not reading, I don't understand why you're not. You're just weird.
No, because I know some better superhero books. I'm not.
Oh yeah, like what?
I'm not saying Ms. Marvel's not one of the better superhero books this year, but I think I have one better. But what is it? Continue.
Well, now I'm curious to hear what you think it is.
I'll tell you. Just continue.
Number two is yet again Saga. What the hell else can I say about Saga at this point that's not already said? Grand epic scope space opera, thrilling adventures, fascinating and endearing and well-loved characters, fantastic action, deep fleshed-out layered story, great relationships, and amazing art. This book just gets better and better as it goes. Brian K. Vaughan is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Brian K. Vaughan is one of the most absolute consistent talents in all of comics. I absolutely love him. Again, anything his name is put on, I'm going to goddamn read it. Fiona and the artwork of Fiona Staples only continues to get more detailed, engaging, and beautiful. It is wonderful to look at. I honestly can't get enough. If they want to put out like a giant artist edition style book of Fiona Staples sketches and such from Saga, and you know, in an oversized edition and whatnot, hey, you know what? I'll buy it. I'll pay like $100 that may or may not cost, because it would very much be worth it to see like some of those original designs. Again, the book gets weird, but there is still very much a heart to it. It is still, in some weird way, a great family book. A book about really one of the most craziest and
family. Family? You mean like Fast and Furious type family?
Yeah. Little bit.
Family.
Except there's no jumping cars from skyscraper to skyscraper. Even though that kind of wouldn't be out of place in Saga. Like a spaceship from space building to space building and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, again, I just can't get enough of this book. Again, what else could I add? That's not... There's a reason so many people are still loving this book. This book is consistent. This book never fails. There is nothing about this book that's outright terrible, except maybe sometimes the wait between story arcs and such. That sucks. That sometimes you can just be like, I gotta reread the previous trade now because I almost kind of forgot some shit about what happened last time because it's been months since the last issue came out.
Okay. That's
the only negative you can give to this book. And if you're a comic fan, you aren't already reading Saga, you're kind of one of the odd people out.
Okay.
That's like just a fact, in all honesty.
So you just stated the facts, huh? Okay.
Yeah, pretty much. Saga's amazing. That is a proven fact. I believe all the Eisner Awards it's won kind of proves that.
Yeah, I think it's fixed. I mean, it's when it was years since it's been out. And, I think somebody needs to bring that book down, peg or two. That's just my personal feelings on it, you know? So that way I can stop reading and get off the bandwagon.
No, you need to stay on the bandwagon.
Sickening.
Stay with us. You know you wanna. Come on, man. Bandwagon. It's fun. It's right, exciting.
What else you got for me?
There's a liquor cart. Alright. Number one book. And it's another horror book. Also from Image Comics. Nailbiter.
Okay.
Nailbiter presents one of the most intriguing and fascinating premises that could be done over a long-form serialized way of storytelling in a while. Created by Josh Williamson and Mike Henderson, writer and artist, respectively. The story details the murder investigations in and around a small town called Buckaroo, Oregon, also known as the birthplace of serial killers, because Buckaroo, Oregon has given birth to 16 of the most notorious serial killers in history, including the titular Nailbiter himself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this book debuted back around summer of 2014. And it's been an intriguing book since then, but this year really got a lot better. Really kicked in the high gear and was continuously engaging and fascinating. The building of the mythology was spectacular. Absolutely fantastic. This book continues to explore the characters of Nicholas Felch, who is there investigating while on the search for his partner, along with the local sheriff, the Buckaroo Butchers, the serial killers from Buckaroo, as they're aptly titled, and the Nailbiter himself, who turns out to maybe be a bit of a sympathetic figure. Or is he? The book dives into its mystery when it needs to, and goes to the character when it needs to, and sometimes they intersect in a beautiful way that's nicely done, and shows that Joshua Williamson has a great grasp on the craft of storytelling. Yes, you will, Stanley Kubrick. The first free trade of Nailbiter is out. Although, Stanley, let me tell you this. Image Comics will be releasing a hardcover collection of Nailbiter in March that collects the first two trades, which would be issues number 1 through 10. So, I'm just making that suggestion. Although, as you know, with Image, you get the first trade, it's only $10. You know, that's how they get you. Hey, it's only $10 for the first one. Yeah. Now I'm hooked. Mike Henderson's art is also a great big reason as to why this is my favorite book. It's a bit of a dirty, gritty book at points. And also a very ugly book. And bloody. Because, serial killers. It's a captivating book. The designs, the look, it's all fantastic.
I can never figure out how serials make people into killers. I never could figure that one out.
Well, I can tell you having two bowls of kicks made me want to kill somebody.
Who made you eat two bowls of kicks?
My parents.
Why not just one?
Maybe because I didn't know better as a child.
Okay.
And why are you calling my local sheriff? Because I just said I wanted to kill people over kicks? I'm pretty sure I'm not the first person that said that. I'm going to stop talking before I incriminate myself. You can talk to my attorney if you want. But anyway. But, goddammit, someone was in my throat. Nailbiter is absolutely wonderful. It is just goddamn fantastic. The way it just keeps
building. That's your number
one
book, Nailbiter?
What?
You and your number one book?
Yeah, Nailbiter is my number one book. That's why I've been talking about it. It's absolutely captivating. It's been the most. It's also been one of the most consistent books for me. And I think really earlier this year, the end of the fourth arc, the third arc, issue 15, was the high. It's definitely the high point of the series, in total. It's absolute. It's captivating. It's high paced. It answers so many questions while setting up so many other questions. It just gets so good. It continues to be absolutely fantastic. This is an amazing book. And honestly, it's one of the few books I read where I'm like, I would actually like to get a chance at adapting this. I would actually like to try and adapt this into, say, like a TV show. Because I really feel that's the only way you can really do the story is over a long form. This doesn't fit within a free act structure of a feature film. Mm-hmm. And such. So, hey, that's my number one book of the year, Nailbiter from Image Comics.
Now, I know you had a top 10, so what are the other six? Read the name. Don't go into detail.
Well, I could have just listed those off and gone into my top five, but okay. 10, The Wicked and the Divine. 9, The Sender. 8, Sovereign Bastards. 7, Deadly Class. And 6, Batman.
Just Batman?
Yeah, just Batman. The Scott Snyder Batman.
Okay. Is he leaving the book anytime soon?
Hell no. Nope.
Is it still Jim Gordon as Batman?
Right now, yeah. As of this moment, although that seems that might change around issue 50.
Yeah, Bruce Wayne needs to stop slacking off and get back to work.
But he's happy.
Yeah, but you know, that's why he's messing up a TV show. See, he's affecting his little kid self on Gotham.
I think there's a lot more affecting that show than just that.
You know, I think, real quick on football, I think Peyton Manning has lost his job for good in Denver.
Okay.
Because they're beating Pittsburgh with the backup quarterback. So, they get the win here. You can forget Peyton Manning stepping back on the field lest he gets hurt. Lest Brock Osweiler, whatever the fuck his name is, get hurt. Alright, so that's your top 5 plus 5. Just your 10 books.
Yeah. All of which are available in trade and in single issue form at your local comic book store, Amazon, or Comixology.
Now, why wasn't Secret Wars in your top books?
Because I generally don't put event books in my top 10 unless they're that great.
So you're saying it's not that great?
No, I really love it. Look, it's on the outskirts of my top 10. It's like number 12 in all honesty. Oh, it's my... If I was doing a bigger list, I would say Secret Wars was number 12.
This bullshit, man. Should be high on your list. It should be high on everybody's list. The artwork is beautiful.
Well, maybe if it wasn't getting delayed so much.
That's the only drawback, but the art and the story has been fantastic.
Oh, it has been.
Anyway, but you asked me what I thought was the best superhero book.
Yeah, what's your superhero book? In fact, what's your favorite comic book of 2015?
I have to go with Thor.
Both answers?
Jason Aaron has been writing a fantastic Thor from day one that he picked up the pen and started writing the book. And then when he changed it over to the new female Thor, he wrote an interesting story as we found out who was this new Thor, who was worthy enough to pick up the hammer, and then he finally revealed it. And now that it's back from Civil War, the book hasn't missed a beat. I mean, in two issues, it's just been fantastic so far. You know, you have this, you know, think about the situation Jane Foster has been in, right, since she's become
Thor. Cancer.
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm saying she's been in some earth-shattering situations since she picked up that hammer. I mean, this is not a thing where she became a hero and she's solely in one situation after another and they escalate. It's been escalating from the beginning.
She's taking on
Malik, taking on Frost Giants, having to deal with the return of Laffy. I mean that's a Laffy is a Odin powered creature. You know, and then, of course, she had to deal with the Odin son, you know, because he's like, where's my hammer? On top of that, she's dealing with the Roxanne Corporation, who's just out to just destroy everything.
Just being a bunch of assholes.
Just for a buck. She's dealing with that Dick Odin, who can't stand the fact that someone else, I think it's chauvinistic that, you know, he sees a woman carrying around his son's hammer and thinks it's stolen.
I think it's more so that it's someone not of his line.
No, I think it's that I really look. They won't publish it, but I think it's because it's a woman. Cause
really, no.
Is he not the one who put the enchantment on there that if you are worthy to pick up the hammer, you get the powers of Thor? Okay.
All right. Yeah. Fair. Okay. It could be part. It's not of like his bloodline, or part that. But, hey, it's Thor with tits.
But. No, because other people have picked up Thor's hammer and gotten their abilities, and it's not like he lost his shit like he has with this particular Thor when Beta Ray Bill became Thor. You know, he ended up giving him his own hammer.
Alright, fair enough. Although, to be fair, everyone loves Beta Ray Bill.
When Eric Masterson picked up the hammer and became Thor. He didn't, like, oh, you were a thief and give me back the hammer.
Okay, I think you've proven your point.
And so, you know, so now there's all-out war in the 9 realms, or 10 realms now that they've added the realm that Angela comes from. But, you know, she has to deal with a war. She has to deal with Odin and his brother, Carl, who's... You know, Odin's pulling out all the stops to get that hammer back. And Odin's going so far as to throw his own wife in prison. And now, just recently, Heimdall got arrested. So, whatever drugs Odin's on, he's, like, really freaking lost it. And so, Jane Foster's putting up with all that. While being Thor is making her die a lot quicker from cancer, so when this particular storyline is over, she's either going to die in a blaze of glory, or maybe she'll just get her own hammer and you know, get a spinoff book or something. But Jason Aaron, he's killing it. And,
it's been a great year for Jason Aaron.
Yeah, I mean, the books he's writing for Image and Marvel. I mean,
like, he's got this. He's got Star Wars.
Vader.
Yeah, Vader. He's got, and Southern Bastards, and recently The Goddamned, which is actually pretty entertaining.
So, yeah.
That's your book of the year.
Yeah, I mean, the Avengers ended earlier this year, and, you know how I feel about Hickman, and, you know, I see that.
You love him.
Well, no, I like the, you know, these long stories he writes, and, you know, IGN is, put the both Avengers book, in their top books for as far as the, you know, time runs out storyline, you know, because the Avengers and New Avengers, they was, even though they was kind of dealing with the same things, they were separate storylines until the time runs out story hit, and then they both, you know, became one longer story. So, and he managed to pull off the end of the Marvel Universe that people didn't have a problem with. They was...
No, he made it, you know, he made it good. He made it interesting.
And, Secret Wars has been fantastic. Yeah, it's been late, and I think that has to do with the art more than anything else, because Isaac Ribic, he's drawn a beautiful book.
Well, he was pretty consistent with Thor, God of Thunder.
Yeah, but I don't think he's done every issue of Thor. And that's the thing, he was doing Thor too, so I mean, you know, I just think that you know, when you doing a book that good, it takes time. So I think that's what's been the delay for the most part on that book.
No, you know, I agree.
It's Marvel's history to delay books, and I think they do some of it on purpose. Oh, did you get your last comic book for the Christmas season from Comixology today?
I already read it.
But you I
read the book before, so I didn't pick it up.
But do you have it on why wouldn't you pick it up on the Comixology app? So you can have it. It's not costing you anything.
Well, that's true, but maybe I want to complete Batman and Robin and Eternal to make sure I want to, you know, see if it's good, see if I want to own it.
Dude, pick up the copy. It's not costing you anything. You have it in your library. Do it. Do it now. Do it.
Click.
Do it now.
I did it.
Do it.
I did it.
Show it to me.
I'm not showing you shit.
Show it to me on Skype. Yeah, share your screen with me.
Really? You need me to do this? Go on with the show, man.
Well, folks, the moment y'all been waiting for, I'm here to talk about the comic book movies of 2015. There wasn't many books this year. I mean, books. Movies. So, out of all the movies that came out, and some of them not really comic book movies, but I put them in this category, we had 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So, I'm going to give you the top 5, and I'm going to tell you the 2 worst, and then I'm going to give you the names of the rest. Now, Jordan, I think you know what's at the bottom of the heap. For us, the comic book movies for this year.
Like the very bottom?
Yes.
Fantastic Four!
Unfortunately, it is. And that's not to say that I thought the movie was as bad as everybody made it.
It's fucking terrible.
On the surface, maybe if it wasn't called Fantastic Four, it would just be...
generic?
Generic to watch on TV. But the problem is, it just, like, because you named it Fantastic Four and you try to bring to life characters that we know and have a perception of, it just really dropped the ball. There's no real action to it. Again, this movie, hold up, they messed up the villain, Dr. Doom. That's the one thing. See, forget the other 2 movies for a second. I don't think they're bad movies, but Doom, that's where they always mess up in all 3 of these films. They try to make him somebody with powers instead of just someone who had, you know, instead of making him into a Iron Man type, you know, someone with a vast intelligence who has a armor that's, you know, formidable. And at the same time, knows a little magic and mysticism. They try to tie in his origin to the Fantastic Four's origin, and they try to give him abilities he doesn't have, and that's not what the character's about. And you know, they try to make this a younger version of the Fantastic Four. They with a very young cast. They made Michael B. Jordan as Johnny Storm, and it's not a problem that he has that role, but you know, the guy they drafted to play Reed Richards, he's a fine actor, but he just was not right for that role. When I think of somebody on Reed Richards' level, I think he's supposed to make me believe this is the smartest man on the planet.
Now, again, that's also a big problem of the movie is the terrible writing and direction. See, the biggest problem is that it's also boring. There's so much monotone. There's barely any expression of some sort of emotion at all outside of when they first are brought back, and we see that they've discovered, oh no, we have these powers. That's like the one modicum of emotion that we get in this movie. You tell me the only time we're gonna have Johnny Storm say, "Flame on," it's gonna be like, "Yeah, flame on." It's like so monotone. Fuck that. This movie's terrible. It doesn't respect the source material at all. Doesn't care for the people that doesn't care to actually examine and make worthwhile what makes a Fantastic Four so endearing and why so many people love this property. It just sucks. It's boring. It's a spit in the face of anyone that loves the Fantastic Four.
I thought this was my list. But anyway, I'm just kidding. So, then the next worst movie. Now, this movie, it's not, it could have been great, but because it wasn't, because they just, something they did, they took a property that, you know, they've done before where it was a Disney property. They took a ride and tried to make gold out of it like they did with Pirates of the Caribbean. You know, that made a lot of money, and now they make movies that shouldn't be going on, but some reason people run flock to the theaters to see it, so they thought they could strike gold again with Tomorrowland. And, you know, they got a big-name actor in George Clooney, and you know, I remember when I saw previews at Comic-Con last year, and it looked like this was going to be like a hit. It was going to be like an amazing movie from the scene they showed us. You know, it had a lot of action. It's like, wow, this is going to be fantastic. The movie itself just, it turned out to be a propaganda tool for, you know, which I believe, you know, we need to save the planet. We need to save the environment. But it just hit you over the head with the message, and forgot to entertain. And so Tomorrowland, you know, the story was about this little boy who was an inventor, and as a kid he discovered Tomorrowland, which is a place in the future where all the bright minds go to make the world a better place. But years later, as an adult, he did something to get banished from Tomorrowland, and then he meets a young girl who discovered Tomorrowland. She wants to go back, and you discover Tomorrowland is like a bad place because, here's the spoiler part, people, so you might want to listen away if you still plan on watching this on video or something. One of the things George Clooney invented as a kid was a way of determining the future, and so they discovered that the planet was going to destroy itself. So the leaders of Tomorrowland just said, well, we'll just let them destroy themselves. And so, you know, and this whole idea, we got to save the planet, which is a good idea, but they forgot to entertain, and so it was a disappointment. And of course, it did flop big time as far as box office goes, because, you know, it was just boring in a way. Any questions, Jordan?
It's just a disappointing movie. What it could set up to be like actually being a movie that proposes scientific, optimism for scientific discovery and advancement. I'm like, yes, I want this. And then for it to just like so drop in the third act. Yeah, I did see it.
Okay.
And for it to just drop in the first act, to be like, oh, solution. Big major explosion, because it'll destroy this thing. It's like, yeah, you disappointed me so much.
Yeah, I mean, it was just flat.
It was one of the biggest disappointments I've seen this entire year.
Another movie that was a disappointment, and I'm not even going to list it as bad, but it disappointed me, was Terminator Genesis.
I didn't even bother with that shit.
You know, hey, the Terminator franchise, it could be one of these great things, but the problem with the Terminator franchise is it keeps what's the best word for this? I'm blanking on the word I want to say. But it really, this whole franchise has never made sense to me because
convoluted.
Maybe in the first movie, they said they beat Skynet. Skynet sent one machine through, so they sent the guy through. They smashed everything that had to do with Skynet. They wanted to save Sarah Connor. She got saved. Okay, but for some reason, just this continuous loop that they could, for some reason, Skynet, who got smashed, still could send Terminators through the machine to destroy Sarah Connor or John Connor, whoever Connor they need to destroy. And then, of course, the Resistance, who didn't have their own time machine, can send people through that same time machine. And, you know, keep these people safe. So they thought, let's do a reboot where we'll show Kyle Reese being sent through the machine by John Connor to rescue Sarah Connor. And, of course, you know, you see the machine gets defeated for the umpteenth time. And then, of course, it's a different past from before, because for some reason the Arnold T-800 Terminator was sent through when she was a child and kept her alive, so that when the original Arnold Terminator shows up, there's another Arnold Terminator to stop him. And then, of course, the timeline is different, because originally the world was supposed to end in 1997, but we're in 2015, so they gotta keep moving the goalposts as to when Armageddon comes and when Skynet comes online to destroy the world. And then when you see who the villain is, it's just infuriating as to why would they make this one particular person into the villain of this particular movie, okay? And the one thing they never showed us is an actual Terminator movie where you see John Connor lead the Resistance against the machines for a full movie. You know, see in the future these people struggling against this machine. They tried that once with Christian Bale and it did not come through. And so now they think we'll start from the beginning and have them do it out. And they bring in your boy to play Kyle Reese. You know who your boy is, right, Jordan?
Matt Smith?
No.
Jason Clark?
No, Jason Clark was...
You mean Plank of Wood, Jai Courtney.
I don't think he's as bad as people make him out. But yeah, some of these roles he's been in just haven't been good roles. And at times he has not acted well. And then they brought in the woman from Game of Thrones. She's a tiny little thing.
She's Amelia supposed to be bad. Clark?
Huh? Yeah. She's a little woman. She's supposed to be a kick-ass Sarah Connor. And Arnold, who's like 75, 80 years old, was the best thing about this. And yet you still see that he's an old dude. So, you know, that was a disappointment all the way around. So those are the bad movies. Any questions?
No, just a comment. Still glad I'm not fucking with Terminator Genesis, because that looks awful. And from what I kept hearing, sounds even worse. Okay. At what point are these movies going to acknowledge, like, John Connor's been like, Kyle Reese, I need you to go back in time and bang my mom?
Well, I kind of get why you don't do that, because...
like, get it in her.
Because if you let somebody know that you're supposed to do something, then that could affect their thinking. You know, things have to happen naturally. So... because even in this movie, when he got told that he has to sleep with her, like the Terminator, like the Arnold Terminator, he said to him, look, you know, you got to mate with her so you can have John Connor. And he freaked out over that. And you know, he was falling in love. He was already in love with her. That was one of the things why he volunteered to go to the machine. Because, you know, he carried her picture around throughout the war. You know, from the time he met John Connor. And that was one of the good things they did. It was like, when you meet Kyle Reese for the first time, he's a little kid in a sewer, and he's scavenging, and he's almost about to be taken out by a Terminator. And then, bang, here comes John Connor, and saving the day. Come with me. And he follows John Connor throughout the whole war as they, you know. And, of course, this is all in the beginning, so you don't get to see this bonding between these two people. And this you know, this mentoring of, like, father and son, where John Connor is acting like a father to Kyle Reese, even though Kyle Reese is John Connor's father. And that's something they could have made interesting, but of course that was just done in the beginning so they could just get to them defeating Skynet as fast as they could and have him go through the machine. Now, Matt Smith, you mentioned him, he's in there, he turns out to be Skynet, and then it's like Skynet knows what's going on, and there's a Skynet from another timeline future who comes back to throw a monkey wrench into the machine. So,
do you ever get a nosebleed when you try to put together the Terminator timeline?
No, because it never made sense after the first movie. I mean, this should have never been a Terminator 2. It should have never been a Terminator 2. You know, look, and the kind of, okay, so the technology was left behind, it kind of made Skynet happen. I could kind of buy that. I couldn't buy it when they did that movie with Christian Bale, and like the resistance, the release of the resistance know that supposedly John Connor's going to rescue them, and they don't like that. Like, why would anybody know that he's supposed to be the savior of humanity? Like, why would that be passed around? He hasn't done anything. And all he did in that movie was talk on the radio. We got to keep fighting. We got to keep fighting. So, anyway. Did I miss a call? Hold on. I did miss a call. No, I didn't. Yeah, Stanley called. Don't worry, I'm not ignoring your call. I just wasn't looking at the screen. And you need to change your Skype image, Stanley, because that just shows that you are very immature. So.
Yeah, that's what it sounds about, Alan.
Yeah. Stanley, you on the air?
I am indeed, yes.
Okay.
Hello, Stanley.
Stanley Cupid, everybody.
But what is my Skype image? Is it of...
Einstein.
Einstein with his tongue out.
Oh, yeah. Well, he was a genius, just like me.
Yeah, okay. Keep telling yourself that. So, I know you have some things you want to talk about, so let me get through the rest of these movies, because can't be on the air too long. All right, so the good movies. Coming in at number 5, I got those little nut sacks of chicken McNuggets.
Really?
Minions.
How are we tying this into a comic book?
It is, okay? Okay, they made into a book. I've seen it.
Oh, all right, I'm gonna be honest. I've gotten sick of these little yellow bastards over this year.
Now,
that's racist.
I know.
Wow. Okay.
That does sound racist. So, it's not the best of the series, in my opinion, because one of the things I thought was lacking, and you really wouldn't think that was the case until you actually see this movie, but you know, having Groot in the movie, Groot makes a big difference. Even though the Minions were seen still as in the first two Despicable Me's, still Groot made those movies popular. I made those movies good. But here, you know, we got the origin backstory of the Minions and how they came into existence and how they ended up with Groot. So of course they're from prehistoric times. They climbed out of the ocean. They evolved, and they're just fucking rotten creatures, and they want to follow whoever's terrible. And you see how they try to latch on to whatever evil's in the area, and they end up doing disastrous things to that evil thing. I think they're really nature's way of making sure nobody gets too evil, because they fuck shit up. And they're not even trying. You know, they want to help the evil person. They end up fucking up these people's world. And so at one point they get to where humanity chases them away. But now that they found a place to live, you know, they're becoming stagnant. And so three of them set off to go find salvation for them in a form of someone that they can follow and be minions to. And they end up in America in the 60s. And then they end up at VillainCon, where they meet the most despicable person at that time, who motivation is to be the best thief in the world. And she's supposed to be, I can't think of her name, her character's name. But anyway, so the three minions that follow her along, you know, to prove that they are worthy of following her, they have to steal the crown from the Queen of England. And silly shit happens, you know. And of course, they find a way to make things right in the end. But you know, you get to see a lot of silliness ensued. So it's not for everybody, but if you're a fan of the Minions, you'll like this movie. Actually, I just bought a copy today because it was on sale and it came with a $5 gift card. So, and plus I had 10% off for a discount. So, plus another 5% off for using my credit card. So, you don't have a problem with that, do you, Jordan?
No, that's smart shopping. That's saving. Okay. That's good. That's smart shopping. Even though I don't give a shit about the Minions.
Of course you don't.
No. The Minions are, to me, are something that are one of those things that, look, these are better in small doses.
All right, so number four, I'm not sure which one to go with, but I think I'll go with Ant-Man for number four.
That's a good choice.
I was trying to flip between one and the other. But, you know, the latest of the Marvel line, you know, this was a movie that people wasn't sure. Of course, they say that every year when they bring in a new property that people haven't seen before, it's like, oh, this may be, they're taking a chance. This may be the first flop for Marvel. And, of course, it turned out to be a nice, fun little caper, you know. They picked the right actors. You know,
right, Paul, people.
Yeah, Paul Rudd as Scott Lang. You know, it worked. You know, it kept it light on the tone, yet, you know, when the action came in, it was, you know, exciting. And you know, it in a way it did mirror some of the movies we've seen with Marvel. It still was an entertaining thing. And you know, his whole idea of him trying to do for his daughter, that's something that's essential to the character of Scott Lang. And you know, they brought in other people to be the comic relief, and that worked out. And you got to meet Hank Pym, and you know, Michael Douglas playing that role, and you know.
Have you noticed that the dysfunctional families being introduced more into mainstream movies like Ant-Man and Star Wars?
Yeah, I mean, that's something new.
That's sort of always been a thing.
And you know, you get a little back history about the Marvel Universe and how things have been going on for years and behind the scenes, and you know, it kept up the tone of what Marvel was doing as far as the cinematic universe. I've not really talked to anybody who walked out and said that was a disappointment. Most people are surprised when they walk out saying, "Yeah, that really surprised me. It was an entertaining film." So,
Ant-Man was better than expected, in all honesty.
Right. So, of course, next year people will be saying the same about Doctor Strange. So they'll say that, or this is going to be a.
Oh no! I want Doctor Strange to be fucking.
No,
great.
I'm just saying this will be. They'll you know, people will have doubts that maybe this will be the movie that'll fail, and it probably won't either. So. Number four, Inside Out by Pixar.
Yay! That's my favorite movie of this year.
Is it? Very emotional film. I know a lot of people, but some people who said they didn't like the film. I think they didn't like it because it really struck a chord with them on an emotional level. It does really have a sad storyline, but in the end, I think it brings you back. Like if you don't have a control of your emotion, it will yank you around. And it's about a little girl, you know, coming of age, coming to terms to change her life and how these affect her through her main emotions of joy, sadness, anger, disgust and stuff like that. And you know, you seeing this child go through a change of her life that she wasn't prepared for, and hey, it could have been worse. It could have been a child dealing with death in her family, and she didn't, you know, hey, some people have it worse, but they made it work, and the whole thing of her emotions coming to terms with that you need all your emotions in order to become a complete person. It's an endearing message, in my opinion.
What movie is this?
Inside Out, Pixar movie.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, my favorite movie of all 2015.
Yeah, so why is that?
It is exactly that emotional core of this film. It takes me all over the place in terms of the emotional spectrum. I cried hard like about 2 times. It's got such a well done premise, interesting cast, and also it's a great film that has such an emotional conflict that it doesn't even need a villain. That's something I really love about this.
How well did it do at the box office?
It made so much money.
It was in the top 5. The only reason it's getting knocked out now is because Phantom Menace is going to smash everything. So.
Phantom Menace.
Force Awakens. Let me see. What was the numbers on Inside Out?
Because in Spain, it sort of came and went and didn't have a big impact.
No?
No, not really.
People don't care for Pixar movies over in Spain?
They do for Disney. Frozen was pretty big. Very big here.
Yeah, but again, Inside Out was just absolutely amazing. I can't stop. Every time I see it, I'm always captivated by it.
All right, Inside Out actually is the 3rd biggest movie of the year domestically.
What is it about? I don't understand what it's about.
It's about, I just said, told you, it's about this little girl who has a major change in her life. And
what change?
She moves.
Like, her family moves. So she loses all her friends. She has to adjust to a new place, new friends. And all the things she was used to that made her happy are now gone.
Yeah, and again, so, it deals with, like, it also explores the ideas of the emotions in your head. It's like this control panel and such, where they're each in control at some certain part of your life. And it goes into, like, some great concepts such as depression.
It sounds like to me like a Pixar in terms of the human condition movie, like Up, rather than the fantasy.
Well, something a bit like that, but it blends fantasy and human condition. It blends those perfectly, and this is also a movie that is one of the few. I love that we've gotten a few movies and TV shows this year now that have honestly actually explored depression in an honest way that shows how affecting it can be. But, and yet, this movie is also still hopeful. The sadness is definitely a show stealer in this movie. It's just absolutely great. Well, again, a movie like this is important. Not just for children, you know, to understand, like, you know, how they feel, you know, whenever, but also for adults as well. It's very important. It's a fascinating movie. There's nothing bad I can say about this movie at all. Now, Stanley, you need to watch this.
Now, Stanley, the thing is, while she's dealing with this, like her emotions, they're out of whack, and they have to come to terms with the fact that all her emotions are necessary to keep her as a whole person. Because inside of her head, the two strongest emotions, which is joy and sadness, they get separated from the rest. They get separated from her control center. And like one of the things of the movie was, joy has always tried to keep sadness down, because like, joy wants to control everything and make this child happy. Sadness, you know, she's like her, that emotion's becoming a lot stronger, and the more she takes over, the more the rest of the emotions don't know how to handle that. And when they're separated from the rest of the emotions, these other emotions don't know how to control this child. So when anger takes over and stuff like that, she starts doing things in her real life that are bad decisions, because she doesn't know what to do now that part of her emotions are gone. And her parents not sure what to do, and, you know, so it's a life lesson for kids, you know. It's, and like I said, a lot of people who kind of didn't like the movie didn't like it because they thought it was just too sad of a movie, and I get it. It struck a chord that they didn't like, so. But I was trying to say, yeah, Inside Out was the third biggest movie domestically. It made $356 million, just behind Jurassic World and Avengers, so. It'll be fourth when it's all said and done. The Minions will get pushed out of the top five. Well, actually, Minions gonna get pushed out because Hunger Games will probably. Well, Hunger Games may not surpass it. Anyway, Star Wars will surpass Minions, so it's gonna be pushed out. But anyway, next film. Had to put this on the list. Not a comic book. It sounded like it could be a comic book movie. It should be a comic book movie. It should be comic book related.
All right, what is it?
Ex Machina.
That's one of my top 10 films.
That's my number one.
Ah.
Domhnall Gleeson, Oscar Isaac. Familiar name from Star Wars.
Alicia Vikander.
Vikander, yes, who's been in just about every other movie this year. This has been her year. All right, so the concept of
artificial intelligence.
Yeah, Oscar Isaac, he builds an artificially intelligent machine and hires Domhnall Gleeson's character to see if this machine can make him believe that this artificial intelligence is actually real and actually alive and actually responding in a way that a real person would. And turns out he made an artificial machine too well to tragic consequences. And it was an indie film, but it was a fantastic indie film. And I wish more people would have seen it. And if we have a chance to rent it or buy it, you should see this. It was an excellent movie. It's an excellent study on the human, on humanity. And
what it basically said, the movie, just don't trust chicks that are interested in you.
No, Stanley, come on, Ev. Take it for you to get the wrong message in that movie.
Don't be a men's right activist.
Don't be a men that go your own way, guy. Don't be a fem-Nazi, Jordan.
And of course, Alicia Vikander, you know, if she wasn't a star before, she's a star now, and she's ended up in more movies. Now she's in a movie that could win best movie of the year. The Danish Girl.
Oh, the lesbian drama, yes.
What lesbian drama? Which one?
That's Carol. Carol's the lesbian
drama. Oh, sorry.
The Danish Girl is the one with Eddie Redmayne as the trans...
Wait, she's going to be in Carol?
No, she's not. I'm just telling Stanley, Carol is the lesbian movie, you know, it's being talked about with Oscars and such. With Kate Blanchett and Rooney Mara.
Oh, I'm supposed to see that tomorrow.
I'm seeing it tomorrow as well.
Now, I thought... What?
Whoa, Stanley, you are coming in and out badly.
I thought this was related to Deus Ex Machina, but it's not.
No, it's not.
I know it's not.
Also, you know, furthering for the audience, like, no, it's a very much completely
But this whole, different. Yeah, the whole movie's just those three characters in one little spot. and seeing each of them deal with each other in different ways. It's
there is a fourth character.
There is no fourth character.
Well, there is kind of the servant girl droid.
Oh, well, no.
Robot Nate.
She's not really a character in a way, but she didn't have no speaking lines.
She was in the shower.
Well, she's still not that big a factor up until, like, the end of the movie. The robot maid.
Yeah.
So.
That was a spoiler. But anyway, because you don't know. But anyway, so how many is that? Four movies?
Yeah, that was your number two. All
right, because my number one, I have two movies for number one.
Really? A tie?
Yes.
Oh, yeah?
Is it Gem and the Holograms?
Come on now. That's the worst. That's in the top worst movies. I didn't even see it. That's the reason why I didn't bring
Stanley,
it up.
That was too obvious.
I didn't see that movie.
Change it up, man. Come on.
Alright, so the 1B movie, Kingsman, The Secret Service.
Yes, I love Kingsman.
Such an awesome play on the whole British spy movie. The British spy thing, done in a fun and creative and funny way, with action pack, even making the villain goofy and over the top worked in this particular movie with Samuel Jackson as like a billionaire mogul with plans of destroying the world and him and his lisp and.
No, he wants to save the world by killing off a good portion of the population.
Yeah, I think there's really people
for global warming.
I think there's really people like that thinks that, you know, the best way to save the planet is to allow people to kill themselves off and
or you know, just you know, conject
that
the
was
mass.
Zuckerberg. That was Zuckerberg.
Well, if you read the original comic, that's the analog for the villain. Or hell, even the movie, that's really the analog.
That was Samuel L. Jackson playing Zuckerberg. I'm telling you that.
Zuckerberg. I never heard you. I never heard said that last.
Facebook guy, whatever he's
called. Zuckerberg.
Zuckerberg, yeah.
Zuckerman.
No, Kingsman's great. It's also a loving send-up, you know, of that super secret agent sort of thing. Yeah. And also a love letter. It's like, hey, we appreciate this as well.
Yeah.
And was a better James Bond movie than Spectre.
Yeah, it was quite a year for spy movies, and I think this was the best spy movie of the year.
I will
you
concur.
Know, when you compare this to Spectre, Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, Fast and Furious 7, that basically was a fucking spy movie in a way. Spy movie.
I'm not sure I can go that way.
Right. Yeah, it was. I mean, they was recruited by the government to go on a mission and stop people, and you know, just because it was, you know, Fast and Furious and family. It
still all right, you made your point.
And so it starred Colin Firth, Michael Caine, Taron Egerton, a whole list of people. And Colin Firth, man, he was fantastic in this.
Mark Strong was good as well.
Yeah, Mark Strong, he's always strong.
Mark Strong was great.
It's in the name. So, and it's a Matthew Vaughn directed film that was a.
That was also co-written by him.
That was a the guy you mentioned earlier, the
Mark Millar.
Mark Millar, yeah, one of his comic book properties. So that's a movie you should see if you haven't seen it already.
If you haven't seen Kingsman, I don't know if we can be friends, personally. I'm just going to say that.
And 1A, of course, you know what it is. It's the movie that should have been number one at the box office for all time. And you people let me down.
Paddington?
Age of Ultron. Okay? It's the
so
Avengers.
So not Paddington.
What?
So not Paddington.
No, Paddington was a fine movie.
Okay.
Did the bear have any genitals on show?
No, he did not. Come on, well, you said you was going to behave. You said you promised me.
Sorry. This is a family show, sorry.
And what can you say? Hulk, Thor, Iron Man, Captain America, Black Widow, Hawkeye come together again, joined by Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, and of course Sam motherfucking Jackson as Nick Fury to take on the evil of Ultron, who of course may not have been the greatest of villains, but still, you know, brought some world-threatening situations to our heroes. Excuse me. And, you know, you had tragedy. You had sadness. You had Hawk versus Hawkbuster. Who would have ever imagined you'd see the Hawk and the Hawkbuster slug it out? But they pulled it off. And you got the Vision. Okay? The scene-stealing character of this movie was when the Vision showed up. Okay? They made the Vision popular again. The Vision had been popular in years. Now he's a popular character again. Okay? Even got him back into the Avengers in the comic book. Because the Vision at one time was the man. And now he's becoming the man again.
I did feel sorry for Ultron. He was a bit outnumbered, I felt.
You have to outnumber Ultron. Ultron is... It takes the entire team to beat somebody like Ultron. What was your thought, Jordan? You about to say something?
No, I was about to say, what's just honestly your favorite film of the entire year? Like right up there.
I just told you the top two.
All right. Just checking.
Avengers,
I mean,
and Kingsman.
Yeah, I highly enjoyed Age of Ultron as well. Maybe not as much as the first Avengers film, but it's still damn good. It's like still got a bunch of great character dynamics, character work, strong action, nice little clips, and hey, nicely done translations of the Vision, as you mentioned, and even, I think more so to me, Scarlet Witch. And I love the Vision, but I was a little bit more impressed with Scarlet Witch.
Yeah, some movies that could have been comic book related but wasn't, that left off here, was The Martian. That was a fantastic film, even though that not a comic book property, it could basically be one.
I'm finishing up the audiobook on that.
I didn't see SpongeBob, so I couldn't give you an opinion on that. Mad Max Fury Road, had to leave that off. Peanuts movie, that was a good movie.
Do you guys see Creed, by the way? Was it any good?
Yes,
Creed is one of my top three films of the entire year.
It's not out in Spain until February.
I feel sorry for you. Creed is absolutely amazing. And the moment it comes out, you need to see it.
Better than that other one that came out, the boxing one, Jake Gyllenhaal.
Oh, say I didn't even see it.
It's okay.
That
the fighting is brutal. The story is okay. It's not as good as Creed. Creed is one of those movies.
Southpaw was okay. It's like, yeah, you know what? Just watch it for Jake Gyllenhaal's performance. There's nothing much else in there aside from
Creed make you walking out feeling good and making you want to go.
Creed was one of those movies that was like, this is why I'm into storytelling. This is why I want to be a writer and director. This! It's amazing.
What else came out? Goosebumps, that was entertaining for a little kid's movie. You know, if you get the chance to rent it, you won't be disappointed in that. Man from U.N.C.L.E. I liked. You know, that was a 50-50 of the way people felt, but if you, I thought it came on the positive side of being entertaining. Not everybody didn't think that, but, you know, saw Krampus, thought it was fun in a goofy kind of way. And that's it, really. Not really a lot of comic book movies this year that came out. So, Hitman, that was a terrible movie. Yeah, it's more video game related, but who's crunching? Didn't see Shaun the Sheep yet, so I couldn't give you. And I didn't see Mr. Holmes, so I don't know how that you know.
That was boring. I switched it off after 15 minutes. I just couldn't take it.
It's Sherlock Holmes related. I've got to see it.
Yeah, I've heard some good things about it.
No, I think I did watch it, actually. Yes, I did. It was a bit boring.
You know, the last Witch Hunter wanted to be something people wanted close to it, but that failed. Sorry, Vin. I know you tried to make that into something. It just didn't work, and it wasn't his fault.
Did you guys watch Hunger Games: Mockingjay 2? Was it any good? Yes.
I've only seen the first
Hunger
two.
Hunger Games 2, yes. If you see all part one, you want to see part two.
I haven't seen Mockingjay yet. I'm waiting until part two is on video so I can watch both parts back to back.
I don't think they needed to split that movie into two. It probably would have been better just making one longer movie. But, you know, Most of the excitement that was lacking in part one, they did make up for it a bit in part two.
Oh, did you see Convergent?
No, I did not see that.
No, I missed it. I liked that.
Oh, wait. Is that the Divergent?
Right.
Really?
And yeah, I don't care about this movie. I saw the second Maze Runner. You know, I was entertained by it. But yeah, it wasn't the best. It didn't need to make the list. So that's it. Cinderella came out. Entertaining for a Disney film, but you know, if you're not into Cinderella, then you could take it or leave it. Spectre.
Disappointing.
Spectre. You know, if you're a James Bond fan, you may like it. You may, if you're a fan of the old James Bond, you'll really like it. If you're a fan of the new James Bond, you'll find it disappointing.
I'm a fan of James Bond, period, and I found this movie to be completely disappointing as all hell.
Now, of all the movies I didn't put on the list, if you have to see one of them, see Peanuts. That won't disappoint you.
Anyway, I'm actually going to go and see that after we're done here.
So, Stanley, you must have called, and that's for a reason. So, what is it that you want to talk about?
I want to talk about why I failed to get that one-hour slot on Ranty Radio the other night.
Why you what now?
Well, I want to talk about all kinds of subjects.
No, seriously, we can't be on for a long time. So, if you got something...
I would love to talk about Star Wars, but I'm probably not allowed because there'd be spoiler alert galore everywhere.
Yeah, that was last night was the chance to do that, and we can get into it when we come back next year. If you want to talk about Star Wars, that'll be enough time that if you want to talk about something spoilers, we'll do that.
So many things that lots of. Things to weave from that movie.
So why didn't you speak up last night?
Because you Americans, you can't get a word in edgeways with all your banter.
Dude, you know, I would have let you talk because you're a friend of the show. And
no, I was also. It was very late as well.
Don't put us down as being Americans because you wish you could be one. So, but anyway. So what's your favorite book of the year, Stanley?
I would say Rat Queens, actually.
Yes, Rat Queens is amazing.
Rat Queens is number one, and number two for me would be probably actually Southern Bastards. I know that Jordan had it at number eight, which is quite low.
That's your opinion, man.
Yeah, I love Rat Queens. Like I said, it's like Spice Girls going into a Dungeons and Dragons world and being the... It's quite a feminist book as well because they save the guys and stuff. And
yes, it's a. What I love about that book, it presents. It's a great portrayal of women of all kinds of sizes, which is a big thing, and you know, races and such and species. It's a fantastic book. It's an incredibly enjoyable, adventurous, and also funny as hell book.
Yeah, and they're vulnerable as well because they've got their backstories show vulnerability in their hard life as well, and
oh yeah, absolutely.
And the sexual preferences.
They are not shy about saying, no, especially Hannah's like, "Yo, you got that dick?
I want it." Like it's like a chick frat house full of adventurers in a Dungeons and Dragons club.
It's a great goddamn book.
And then Southern Bastards, because it deals with the problems of small redneck towns in America. It's a bit exaggerated, of course.
Well, I've
well, I've already had that I've discussion
met,
with you.
I've met Jason Aaron, and I think he's writing from experience on that one.
Well, if that's true, like, that like, really happened.
Well, he's going up upon the experiences he had growing up in a town like right. that from.
But you can't go around like thugs, like Nazi thugs, in a small American town beating
okay,
up.
Okay, Stanley, I had this talk with you. It's storytelling. Some things are going to be slightly exaggerated for the heightened sense of getting the audience involved. I've already explained that to you. I mean, I love The Wire. I don't think there's really ever going to be a realistic cop show. Even The Wire. I'm sorry, as much as I love The Wire, that's not really going to be a great like reason.
Yeah,
like this is the most.
Yes, but the Wire is based on real people from the early 90s, like Omar, the sort of the stick up guy.
You still stuff for TV and movies are exaggerated because there may be, you know, bad people in the world, but what they're really doing is kind of boring in real life. So they have to take liberties to make it more exciting.
Yeah, exactly. It is survival. It is survival, so they dramatize the
exactly, which is what I explained to you when we had this conversation before. It doesn't bother me. What matters to me, and this is what Southern Bastards does, it captivates me. It engages me in the story. It hooks me in, and I am captivated to follow these characters, be they good or be they incredibly fucking evil. I find, especially, you know what I find interesting? Like, I like the story arcs, and so I love the first story arc, and even the one that followed Coach Boss and seeing how he became. But you know what's been the most fascinating thing? This current arc, the Homecoming arc, where it's like an anthology book, where we're following around. Okay, well, where it falls around different people and different aspects of the, of the town. It's incredibly fascinating and adds more life to the book. Southern Bastards is an amazing book.
Any other books, Stanley?
I guess I haven't read too many this year because I've been busy, but Sex Criminals is okay. It's hipsters who have sex and can freeze time. And
Sex Criminals is amazing.
Now, have you been getting the free comic books on the Comicology Acts over the last 20 days, Stanley?
No, I've not seen any free comic book deals anywhere on any
See,
website.
You
any
you're not a... Are you on Facebook?
No, not really. I'm not really a Facebook person.
So you don't have a profile on Facebook?
Not Stanley Kubrick. Well, no, my real
right.
name.
Okay, because, you know, are you not following us on Facebook?
No. Maybe on Twitter I am, actually.
You need to follow us on Facebook because I was posting the different free comic books that Comicsology was giving out over
Comicsology was giving away 20 different free 20 different free first issues of various books for like a 20 days of Christmas, you know, gift sort of thing.
That's maybe you're on Comicsology USA. I'm on Europe.eu. So
okay, see, sir.
Matter.
Oh, okay.
Oh, we might have been free here, but yeah, I just put a link.
Might be a different promotion going on over there.
You need to like that page, okay? So you can keep up with the news that we are keeping up with, and so on like that, okay? So anyway, real quickly,
Star Wars as well. The Darth Vader and the Luke Disney time ones. The ones that show the gaps between Empire and
Empire.
Oh, lovely. That was
yeah,
great.
Yeah, no. Darth Vader is the best of those books. Darth Vader was actually my number 11 book. It almost got onto my top 10 list, but then I cut off with The Wicked and The Divine, and then that pushed it out.
So, real quick, what would y'all say was the best TV show for comic books?
Oh, comic book TV show? The Flash, hands down.
Oh, Daredevil, hands down. Daredevil, without a doubt.
Daredevil is almost beat The Flash for me, but it's like nose to nose for me.
When you recommended Daredevil to me, I thought this Jordan Cobb He's recommended this super serious program where all the main characters are quite jovial and the humor's sick, and then it got into the real dark action. And I thought, holy moly, well, how can they allow this?
And again, Daredevil to me is still my favorite Marvel character, and I thought this was a most brilliant adaptation of it.
So have you seen Jessica Jones yet, Stanley?
I haven't. It's on my Netflix to-do list. No, it's and I heard it's quite raunchy and dark, and but
yeah,
that's all
great.
I know about it.
It's fantastic.
Right. Real quickly, I'm gonna read some headliners.
What
you about to say?
What was your favorite comic book show, sir?
I don't know. I mean, I kind of keep everything on an even keel, you know, so. I mean, I could tell you how great Grimm is, but you don't want to hear it. So, and you know, I was in the Flash.
You can talk about how great Grimm is.
Let's skim some headlines. Like Bizarro set to appear on Supergirl for this season, so we're going to get Bizarro. We're not getting Superman. The runtime for Batman v Superman. What is the runtime on?
151 minutes.
So, what does that translate to?
2 hours and 41 minutes.
Yeah, a long movie. Not Watchmen long, but still a long movie.
A very extremely long fucking movie.
Well, it better deliver. It better deliver. For 2 hours and 40-something minutes, it better deliver on every second. I don't want to go through 25 minutes of just some guys talking in a room. So they're saying, so Kathleen Kennedy, who runs Lucasfilm, saying that the entire cast is returning for episode 8 of Star Wars. She says Harrison Ford. I don't know how that's going to happen. Considering he doesn't want to come back, and maybe they're putting enough money in his coffers to come back. So if they are coming back, hey, hooray! Mel Brooks. What?
I was gonna say Mel Brooks confirmed Spaceballs too.
Yeah, we're finally getting that sequel. Of course, we already know that Star Wars has smashed the box office record, so that's old news, very old news. Batman vs. Superman may be released in 70mm, thanks to Quentin Tarantino, because some of the theaters have are using 70mm for The Hateful Eight. They may just keep the things around the show Batman in 70mm, which I'm confused, because what's supposed to be the bigger format, IMAX or 70mm?
I thought IMAX was 70mm.
No, IMAX is 65.
You can film IMAX with a scope with 70mm film. Now, 70mm film is more used for a wide scope and range of things to really show off what you're filming, which is why Tarantino's jizzing his dick all over this for Hateful Eight. It's like, I just got the experience this way.
Okay. 70mm was the old format they used to be used on.
35, it used to be.
But the thing is, with IMAX, like,
but 35mm is the standard.
Like, one of the reasons why films is not completely filmed in total IMAX is because that's a big fucking. It takes up a lot of film to film in IMAX. Like, when they film in IMAX, they usually film like 15-20 minutes of a film. Because it takes up a lot of space. It takes a lot of, even digitally, it's still a lot. So I'm trying to figure out how you can film in 70mm without a problem. And that's the thing. The other thing with 70mm, that they're putting it on film, something that's not being done today. So now you're shipping in all these reels of film to show it in 70mm, where everything else is being done digitally now.
Almost everything you can still do film. There are still film.
Yeah, but it's, at this point, it's not being done because it's. Listen,
I'm not disagreeing with that. Digital is the way of the land now.
theaters now, all they have to do is just press a button and the movie downloads onto their hard drive, which they can show it in more theaters at one time. Whereas with film, you have to mail a reel of film for each theater you want to show it in. So,
one interesting thing, I once watched an IMAX in London and the screen was concave, so it was sort of was like a dome. You imagine a, yeah, like a dome.
But that was the that was the original IMAX format. It's called the Omni Dome.
I've never seen that.
When IMAX first came out, it was being used for like scientific films and stuff. So you get that immersive experience, like you're watching stuff, like say like you're watching a roller coaster, and it feels like you're following the roller coaster over the dip and following it through, and like the shots they used to use when they're soaring over landscapes and stuff, it looks like you're actually there. That's why that experience is meant for. But now that they use IMAX more for regular mainstream films, that particular screen, people don't like watching like Titanic or Avengers and stuff or Star Wars on that particular. It doesn't bother me as much, but like the one theater that we have here, the seats are built for like a 15-20 minute viewing. So if you're sitting there for 2 hours, 2.5 hours, you're dying because you're squeezed into a small area where you have no leg room. And it wasn't meant for that. But, you know, when they started building flat screen IMAXs, at first they was building them and it still there wasn't that many IMAX films being released, to a point like they built like the one IMAX theater near me, they built that in about 98, 99, and it got to a point where there was so few films coming out in IMAX, they stopped showing IMAX films altogether, and they took off the marquee that they had an IMAX theater. But now there's enough films coming out in IMAX that, you know. But even now, that it's like, if given a choice, people go see stuff in IMAX too. Where like Regal built their own large screen format, which they call RPX, because you know they. IMAX is a different brand. They can't, you know, it's not still not that many IMAX theaters. AMC converted a lot of theaters to IMAX, but they're not true IMAX, so sometimes you don't get the full picture.
You ever been to synchronized seat moving theater? I don't know what the technology is called.
Well, like the seat rumbles and shakes with the theater.
D-box.
Yeah, that's the one.
They have not really put that in this area yet, but.
I've never been around D-Box, so like, nothing. It sounds cool. I want to try D-Box. Just got pins on the right movie, and if I got that money.
You know, back in the day, they used to have movies where they would shake like the whole theater, like the sound is the, like, you ever see the movie called Earthquake?
Yeah, the 70s one.
Right. When that came out, they put in the system so that when the earthquake would hit, like the entire theater would shake. And that was the closest you got to.
Suppose you're dying for a pee, and then the actual seat shakes the pee out of you.
Well, it's.
Ha! God damn it!
Come on now, Stanley. You said you're gonna behave.
It's Stanley. Have you ever known him to tell the truth about something he said he was doing?
Mm-hmm. ABC is airing 75th anniversary for our great American hero, Captain America, in January. Special television salute to the old shellhead, red, white, and blue hero himself.
Yes, Marvel's Captain America 75 Heroic Years is airing Tuesday, January 19th at 8 p.m. Eastern.
Who would have thought at 75 years after him punching Hitler in the face that he'd be still around to keep the red, white, and blue going?
He did. Also, Vixen is coming to live action on Vixen? Arrow.
You said Vixen.
Vixen.
Okay, yes. And who's
Megalyn, that? I'm gonna fuck this up. Etchikunwoke. Apologies to that actress.
Eklund Woke?
Yeah, sure, let's go with that. She's gonna make, who voiced Vixen on the CW Seed Arrowverse related animated web series, is coming on to season 4's 15th episode. Mark Guggenheim said that we're not only thrilled to be further expanding our DC television universe by bringing in the live action incarnation of the CW hit Vixen, but we're immensely excited that Megalyn will be revising her role as Mari McCabe, who, as we all know, is Vixen, aka has the abilities to mimic. Has the power to mimic the abilities of animals, thanks to an amulet passed down through her family.
That's Manimal. Manimal with boobies.
No! Why she can transform?
So Michael B. Jordan is co-writing North with Nathan Edmonton for Dark Horse.
Yes.
Spider-Man's gonna make a cameo in Doctor Strange, so. You're going to get more
the new kid Spider-Man.
The new Spider-Man, yes, of course.
Not the
Tom
amazing.
Holland.
Yeah.
Gotham Academy trailer drop for the new video game.
What game?
Gotham Academy.
There's a Gotham.
Marvel Avengers Academy.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Sorry. And Stanley, I know you into high fashion. You can get some BB-8 high heel shoes.
God damn it. And little sort of white and orange panties with a bunny girl.
If that's what you need to wear the BB-8's high heels, you know, I don't judge. Titan's going to launch a Penny Dreadful comic book. You know, it's a popular show on
I still need to watch it.
Stars. Flash characters coming to the TV show. Is it Eliza Harmon? Trajectory.
Yeah.
All right, so we get she's another speedster, right?
Yes. I'm trying to bring up the article because I'm trying to navigate through this damn page because I didn't know we'd be doing some news. If I knew, I would have made the doc.
We're just skimming through news because, you know.
Eliza Harmon is playing Trajectory. Will debut in episode 16 as a exceptionally bright scientist who has a split personality. And in DC Comics, she was a Lex Luthor created speedster.
Oh, that Mr. Luthor. Marvel's eyeing Kurt Russell to play Chris Pratt's father in Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
So, that's the rumor at this point, so I'm not going to get to it.
Yeah. The thing is, if they do use Kurt Russell, then the whole rumor that he may be a son of Star Fox may be out the window, because I think Kurt Russell be too old to play that particular character. And they may be going with the actual character from the comic books. This is his father, which is...
Okay.
Who's a...
Jason,
who's a... Who,
leader of the Spartax
He used
Empire?
To be a cool dude, but now he's a dick. And he betrayed everybody doing Infinity. And got a lot of people killed. Did we talk about last week about Paramount making a...
No, that was this week's news.
So Paramount wants to make a movie universe out of their toy properties. So they want to unite G.I. Joe and Transformers with the Micronauts and Rom the Space Knight.
Oh, that would be good. All the 80s toys all in one.
Listen. Maybe Rom and G.I. Joe's compatible. I can even see like G.I. Joe and the Transformers teaming up to take on Cobra and the Decepticons. But I can't see where the Micronauts fit into all this.
I think I remember Rom. Didn't it get quite serious in bits with like Galactus turning up and people getting ripped apart by molecule guns and screaming and their horrid death. I remember.
They didn't scream horrid death. He was banishing dire wraiths to the Phantom Zone, but because the dire wraiths were hidden as humans, it made it look like he was disintegrating people.
I'm sure that someone like Galactus turned up and he killed a senator in a horrible way. Ripped his molecules apart.
Who, Rom?
Not Rom. It was someone like Galactus.
Galactus wouldn't show up and kill a senator.
But it wasn't a human senator. It was almost like an alien senator.
No, Galactus wouldn't show up and kill an individual. That's not what Galactus does. Galactus only shows up to consume a planet of his energy. And the one time he dealt with Rom, Galactus showed up to Rom's home world. Rom went back home to prevent it. Rom tricked Galactus into going to the Dire Wraith's home world to consume that. But it turned out that the Dire Wraith's home world wasn't going to go down without a fight, because there's just some evil spirits involved, and they tried to consume Galactus, and Galactus barely made it out alive, and he just left everybody alone. But to punish Rom, he sent Rom's planet hurling through space to some place that Rom could never find his home planet. He did end up finding it, but it was a long time later. Okay. Christian Ritter lands Critic Choice Award a nomination for Jessica Jones.
Cool.
And there's going to be Apocalypse War in the comic books, where they're going to have three generations of Apocalypse, so different versions of him. Okay. Howard Stern is giving away all 85 covers of Dark Knight 3. I don't know if he did that already or if he's still doing it, but it was a contest involved. And Images of... Oh. We talked about this last week about the Doctor Strange writer, correct?
Yes. Cargill.
C. Robert Cargill, someone we know from a different website. Who
formerly CarlisleSpill.com. Screenwriter of the Sinister Films and author of Dreams.
Movie critic.
Yes, and author of Dreams and Shadows and Queen of the Dark Things.
I met him. He didn't realize I was a tall black man. He thought I was a little nerdy white kid.
I've met him as well, and he is a very nice man. He is a very good man.
Mm-hmm.
So, hey, congrats, Cargill. That's awesome.
Yeah, because
what did he get again? What was it?
He's Doctor Strange. He's
one of the writers on Doctor Strange.
Holy shit, he's risen quite high.
Hell yeah.
Him and his writing partner, they were one of the writers on the Doctor
Strange. By the way, sir, did I tell you, I actually know someone who worked on The Force Awakens this weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah, a friend of mine from film school, John Hockaday, worked on production.
So why aren't you working on production?
Because I didn't have enough money to move out to goddamn California, that's why.
Well, okay, he's living out there, right?
Yes.
He's a friend of yours?
Yes.
Okay. Impose yourself.
All I'm saying, Jordan, is that C-3PO is getting old.
He's making it. Now go move in with him. You know
what the hell?
Go move in and eat peanut butter and ramen noodles until you make it.
Okay? I don't like ramen noodles too
Just
much.
Do it.
Thank you,
make
Shia LaBeouf.
Your dreams come true and do it.
God damn it. Thank you, Shia LaBeouf, or strange man in my room pretending to be Shia LaBeouf.
He's the kind of guy who doesn't change his underwear and stuff and lies in the bath for 20 hours a day, that guy.
All right, I'm sorry, so, are you talking about me or was that you last week?
That was Shia LaBeouf.
Okay.
All right, so now we're wrapping up this year and of Christmas. Did you get the Christmas gift I sent you, Jordan?
Have you actually sent me something?
Yeah, I send you something every year.
No, you don't. You don't send shit.
I said, dude, I don't know what. I don't know. Maybe UPS is.
Alright, well then, if you send it, it's late as hell.
Maybe UPS keeps stealing because I keep sending you awesome ass gifts.
Was it shaped like a rocket and golden?
No, come on now, stop. Stop. This is the end of the year,
what?
Stanley.
What?
I'm talking
Stanley.
About a lightsaber, for God's sake.
No.
A lightsaber.
Alright, what'd you give me this year, Surfer?
That would spoil the Secret Santa surprise.
Oh, really? How can it be Secret Santa if I knew you got me the gift?
Oh, look.
There's a secret.
Look at this
headline. The secret of Secret Santa is that I'm supposed to get the gift and then find out who gave it to me.
Look at this headline on comicbook.com. Matt Damon has heard Batman v Superman is good. What else is he going to say at this point? It sucks.
I don't think he needs to ride Ben's coattails anymore. Mm-hmm. Matt Damon's doing just fine.
All right, so Stanley, what are you going to be doing for the holidays?
I'm going to be here in Madrid with my family, eating and making merry, and that's it, and just slouching.
So you're going to stay out of trouble?
Yeah. There's politicians outside my home because we've had the general elections today, and there's no overall majority. So I'm going to go out and create some trouble.
Fuck shit up.
We have no majority government, essentially. If we don't form government in 2 months' time, we have to have...
You know, your government never apologized for the Spanish Inquisition. You know that, right?
Well, they shouldn't have had sex with pigs. That's my only conclusion. Back in the day, you wouldn't last a minute under that kind of scrutiny. I go light on you guys. But those guys, they're hardcore.
Not to mention, your people are responsible for Columbus coming to America.
I was looking at Christopher Columbus's history. We have a big statue of him about 5 minutes walk from my house. He was a bastard. He used to, in his colonies over there, anyone spoke badly about him, he cut out their tongue and stuff. He was a bastard, that guy. Anyone... You know, scrutinized him. They were immediately incarcerated, whipped, flogged, and then expelled from the local.
All right, that's getting dark now. We know.
All right. Family show.
Yeah,
remember?
Family show, people.
What the fuck?
It's getting late, and we need to get on to the Christmas. Anybody looking forward? Got any New Year's resolutions they want to share now, or that's
just... I don't like resolutions. I know, so that's just a bunch of bullshit. I'm just like, I'm just gonna keep doing me. Whatever changes I need to make, I'll just make them. I'm not gonna be like, I'm gonna do this, and then 3 months later be like, I'm not gonna do this.
Just do it.
Look, I'm gonna go with what life gives me. God damn it. Fuck resolutions. I don't like New Year's resolutions. Here's my resolution. Keep being awesome. There, keep that up.
My resolution is keep being adaptive and make new resolutions every day to gain benefit from your situation. That's the best resolution you can.
It's actually not. That actually might be the best thing I've heard you say all year, Stanley.
Apart from, hot. 60 plus, volume 18 being the best movie of the year.
I'm still going to debate you on that, but yeah, sure, I'll go with that. I still say anal slut schoolgirls, but...
Family show.
No.
Oh, really?
Family show.
You know what? I think it's time we say our goodbyes. Now, when we come back in a couple weeks, which will be... Sorry, I'm trying to pull up the date. January 3rd? Oh, come on now. Where's my calendar at?
I'll pull mine up.
I'm trying to click on the calendar on my computer, and it's not showing. What date you got?
We're still on holiday until the 5th. Of Jim.
How many weeks do we have off?
Well, we'll be off next weekend. And we'll come back after the new year.
All right, so January 3rd is what you're looking at.
Right.
All right, January 3rd.
There'll be nothing. There'll be no news on January the 3rd.
So, you know, when we come back on January 3rd, we're going to have the ultimate discussion, the ultimate roundtable. We want you to join us when we discuss who would win in a fight.
I missed that. What was that? The who and when what?
Well, you know, we'll you know, call out some names. You know, who would win in a fight? Superman or the Hulk,
really?
And people will give their reason of why they think this guy would kick the other guy's ass, and so
really
on.
A versus discussion.
That's right. You got a problem with that?
I've kind of grown out of those.
No, you never grow out of it. You're a real comic book fan.
All right, fine. I'll do my job. I'll be here because I'm a professional.
You got a real? You really got a problem with that?
I'm fucking with you, man. I Jesus. Mean, come on.
You know, I try to keep things light and fun around here.
I'm fucking... Jesus, I'm fucking with you.
Can we now, have a sort of analysis on Black Cat versus Catwoman?
If that's what you want to discuss, sure.
Yeah, but, all right. Yeah, we'll talk about it.
If both of them fight people,
not now, though.
Butter.
Not now. But anyway, no, most of the shows will be on hiatus for over the next couple of weeks. But when we are back at full strength, okay, these are the shows you'll get. First, this week, there's still a couple of shows left this week. Like this Tuesday will be a special edition of Talk Brunch. And then Wednesday will be the Turnbuckle Throwbacks, Malcolm X Christmas Special, live at 9 p.m. And I believe the rent, the Turnbuckle Throwbacks will be Tuesday at 8 p.m. Okay? I'm not sure about Rent and Wrestling. If they still coming on this week, that'll be Thursday at 9 p.m. I don't know when I'm doing a live show this coming Saturday at 11, but he might. But we are back, and we'll be back starting January 3rd. It'll be us live at 5 p.m. the What Are You Reading Comic Book Show, followed by Mondays on the 11th. Talk Brunch will be live at 11:30 p.m. on Mondays. So Rick Darrow and Mick Wrestling, they'll be live on Monday. I think it's the 11th, the first Monday. And before that, you know, they'll be at a regular time of Wednesday at 8 p.m. Tuesday night will be Durant at 8 p.m., followed by Freaks and Geeks at 11. So that's the doubleheader. Thursday, as always, will be Rent and Wrestling at 9. Friday's Turnbuckle Throwbacks at 9 p.m. Wrestling Call-In Shows every Saturday at 11 p.m. And, of course, we'll be doing all kinds of shows in the coming weeks. We'll have the WWE Royal Rumble, which will be at 6 p.m. They're going to have the Black Achiever Awards. The Ranties will be back on. All kinds of stuff coming up in the new year. So, and last night, we had a winner as to Star Wars trivia. So
I accept the award. Thank you.
Well, you get to share the award with the real winner.
Well, he won't discuss the kind of things I like to discuss.
You say?
He won't discuss with me the kind of things I like to discuss.
Well, first of all, Stanley, to do this hour-long show, which the winner is going to get on the network, it has to be... There's no playing around, okay? So, I mean, you can just... If you can... He wants to contact you so y'all can discuss what kind of show you can have. But, you know, there's no playing around. You know, and it still has to be approved by the head of the network, so...
Yeah, I know. And no playing around. It has to be organized, prepared. It can't just be winging it. I know all that.
So, did you sign up for our Facebook page yet, Stanley?
I haven't, no, but I have to use my real name.
I gave you the mic.
Because I don't have a Stanley Kubrick.
You don't have to have a Stanley Kubrick. Use your real name.
Yeah, I'll use that. But that I can never be identified.
You won't be identified. We know you were a fugitive of the law. I get it.
I know. I'm wanted in over 50 systems.
Okay, well, you know. I know nothing. John Buckle throwbacks will be Wednesday. I said that. This Wednesday. This Wednesday only. Hey, Ricky in the chat room. How can you even call in? What's wrong with you? It's your problem. Especially after all the junk you talked last night. But hey, don't worry about it, you know.
He was talking sense, actually. I fully agree with him, but I'm a very lenient person.
Quite. All right, so we're gonna call it a night. Let's just say our goodbye so I can play us out with a nice little Christmas song.
Good night. And Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays, everybody.
Christmas, Holidays, Festivus, Kwanzaa.
Okay, you stocking stuffers. I hope you have some nice eggnog. And make sure it is eggnog.
Okay, so appreciate the support. Listen to us on iTunes and Stitcher and everywhere that we post the show. And give us a call. You know what? We're going to be getting rid of the phone number soon, Jordan.
All right. Because, this is off backstage stuff. Talk me off the air.
No, I'm just saying, I'm not going to pay for the phone number anymore.
All right.
If you want to call in, you just use Skype because I'm wasting money and the other reason is something I can't discuss with you on air or off the air, so.
All right.
All right, so good night, everyone. Peace.
How much fun it's gonna be together. This Christmas, fireside's blazing bright. We're caroling through the night. And this Christmas will be a very special Christmas. Are here. My world is filled with cheer and joy.